1272, State X Rel, in re support of Robert H., Calumet County Department of Human Services versus Randall H. We have as our speakers today, is it Petronik?
Petronik.
Petronik. Mr. Petronik for 25 minutes. Miss Buchinger. And then we have 7 minutes of that time by Ms. Gerbert, and then a rebuttal by you, sir.
Yes.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brett Petronich, and I represent the petitioner appellant in this matter, Randall H. Your Honors, this case represents an important opportunity for this court to reinforce and apply a very important principle of special education law.
Counsel, would you please speak up? I'm having a little difficulty.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Hearing, and it's probably not you, it's probably our system, but nevertheless.
Right, all right, I'll lean in.
You can raise that podium if it's helpful.
I hope that helps. The principle involved is the concept of a free, appropriate public education. And the word in dispute today is whether the appropriate public education for Robert is going to be free. We have state law which governs this question, and the state law, of course, is to be construed in accordance and in conformity with federal law. The state law is section 115.81 of the Wisconsin statutes. Randall H. asks only that this court apply section 115.81 as written, nothing more. The language of section 115.81 is clear and unambiguous, and no party in interest has thus far argued otherwise. The language of 115.81 indicates by its terms that it was intended to apply to the very factual scenario that is present in this case. The language is specific as to how and when it applies and as to the scope of its coverage. We respectfully contend that the trial court erred in interpreting and applying section 115.81 by giving credence to child support obligations also found in Wisconsin law, instead of the special education law embodied in 115.81 and accompanying federal statutes and regulations. We therefore respectfully request that this court grant us relief.
No, the trial court in Calumet saw two things. He saw that the initial it was involving a mental health consideration. So there was this placement based on that consideration. And you seem to indicate, well, that is not the fact that the paramount situation is the educational part or aspect of this case. Is that a correct understanding of your position?
In a certain respect, Your Honor, Randall's position is that there were two placements.
Yes.
The court-ordered placement pursuant to the CHIP petition under Chapter 46 and a subsequent IEP team-based placement under Section 115.81. And our position is that the circuit court basically nullified the second placement by determining that because the first placement lacked an educational context or motivation, therefore the second placement didn't have any independent legal effect.
Well, isn't it significant that the CHIPS placement came first? That doesn't that appear to be the dominant placement, if you will?
Your Honor, I believe the statute is going to contemplate two placements, and by the way it's structured, 115.81, it would at least imply, and I believe strongly so, that the CHIPS placement will precede the subsequent IEP team placement. I refer the Court's attention to Section 115.81, which states that whenever the County Department recommends to a court that a child be placed in a child-caring institution, the county department shall notify the local educational agency. Now, in most CHIPS contexts, I understand the process is somewhat expedited. There is a notion that the child may well need protection and services on a short term, on a quick basis, I should say. The IEP team process takes a little bit longer. You have to convene the team, do an analysis of the child's educational background and needs, and then make several determinations, including whether services will be continued to be expected.
Isn't the language that you just read to us the language that basically focuses on the fact that we don't want children in CCIs without getting education? How does that help you with the argument that your client has no obligation to pay any support for this child?
The policy embodied in the law is exactly as you described. We don't want children languishing. That's the idea. And under CHIPS, JIPS, or any other court-ordered placement pursuant to a county recommendation.
I'm sorry, I'm having a very hard time hearing you.
I apologize.
Just slow down a little bit.
We can hear you well when you were a little closer.
Okay, I'll do my best.
We've had problems with the sound system for 2 years, so don't take it personally.
The notion that the parent doesn't pay if an IEP team comes forward and states that a residential placement is necessary for the child to receive educational benefit is the cornerstone of the free appropriate public education concept. And that is, again, that children, by virtue of disabilities, and their parents, by virtue of their children's disabilities, need not incur extra costs in order to obtain some educational benefit.
Here, he's first confined to the, by the reason of the CHIPS order, and then later comes the IEP, and then the educational needs. Now, it seems very clear to me that some of the, there are a lot of costs involved with Robert, right? There's the room and the board, there's the education, there's the medical costs, there's all kinds of costs. Now, some of these are associated with educational needs and some of them are not. Some of them, well, is it your position that because there has been, or because there are educational needs here, that all of these costs must be paid by whomever and none of them by Randall? Or must Randall pick up some of the costs that are not related to educational needs?
You ask essentially what the categories of allocation might be, I believe. And the law states that in the event the residential program is necessary for the child to obtain the educational benefit, then all costs of the program, including non-medical care and room and board, shall be at no cost to the parent. The law, federal law, which is of course incorporated into Wisconsin law, excludes medical services from that equation so that theoretically...
Sub 5 of 115.81 arguably says something different. It says that they must pay all of the residential care center for children and youth-related costs of educating the child. Some of these costs are not related to educating the child.
That's where the federal law kicks in, Your Honor.
That's where the
federal law will kick in, because federal law is longstanding in this area that if the, again, it goes to residential placement, and that's exactly what sub 4B5 also goes to. If the program is necessary for the child to receive the educational benefit, implicit in that concept is that the kid...
So, I'm going to have to elevate voice.
Okay.
And slow down. My ears apparently are in need of a cue.
Bring it way up. And
but if you could slow your speech down.
So I'll do my best. I'm accused of that before.
Okay.
If the child needs the residential services in order to obtain educational benefit, then it is unfair to the parent, implicit in the federal policy anyway, to require that parent to pick up the extraneous costs. Okay? The idea being, of course, that it goes back to the very concept of special education funding, and that the children by virtue of disabilities are recognized as needing special services.
But the problem that I have, Counsel, with your formulation here, is that any time a child is, such as Robert here, is confined as a result of the CHIPS order, CHIPS hearing, that has nothing to do with his educational needs, then it seems to me that the argument is made that it is the child is in need of education, the child is confined, therefore educational needs must be provided, therefore all costs must be taken care of. That seems to be your argument.
I would actually distinguish your characterization slightly. The question you raise involves confinement, and this case does not involve confinement. The CHIPS order in this case was a placement order, and the IEP team recognized it as such by explicitly stating in the IEP document twice that it considered and rejected placing Robert in the local school district due to his mental health needs. In other words, I believe it understood, and from the face of the document that seems supported, that the least restrictive environment obligation that is placed on IEP teams was going to be honored in this instance. It is a rare, and supposed to be rare, circumstance where a child in need of special educational services is removed from what we call the mainstream educational environment and put into a segregated environment.
But if it's necessary to confine a child because of mental health problems, then how can any court or any IEP team say that except for education, you don't have to confine him for educational purposes? Here he's confined for mental health reasons.
In this sense, if you're again concerned about...
It doesn't make any sense to me that you can say, okay, you're dangerous to yourself and you're dangerous to others, therefore we're going to confine you. But except for when you need to go to school, then you can go out.
The IEP team, quite honestly, Your Honor, is intended and required to make that determination. In fact, what risk the child would pose to himself or others in an educational environment, and then make the appropriate, least restrictive placement offer. In a confinement situation, I think the Court of Appeals decisions in the interest of Trent N. would answer the question, and that is that special education law and juvenile law don't need to butt heads with one another. In fact, both can work in conjunction with one another, and I believe that an IEP team faced with a pure confinement scenario, a child who is truly a danger to himself or others, would find that child placed in a confinement situation, they would very likely respect that for the same reasons the confinement was initially ordered.
But if the IEP, and maybe I'm just beating this to death, but if the IEP were to say, okay, he doesn't need to be confined for educational purposes, wouldn't that in effect be countermanding the juvenile court's order of confinement?
If there were a confinement situation involved, yes. Again, this
saying that the IEP can override the juvenile judge.
You're touching on an issue that could involve probably several hours of discussion, but that would involve more, I think appropriately, the preemption question that this court certified.
This exchange between the two of you rely on the word confinement?
It does, Your Honor.
And your position here is that this child is not being confined.
Yes, it is.
The child is being placed, but not confined.
Exactly.
So he is being placed in an institution, right?
Yes.
Okay.
and he's being placed in the institution because a court said, petitioner is a parent, that he needs to be so placed for his own security as well as perhaps others, right?
Yes.
Okay. So now he's there. Now we have a problem of how to educate him, and he is. He had been going to school, had been mainstreamed, if I'm using that term correctly, and that he can do well, can benefit, as all of us can, from education, right? Okay. So now he has a plan set for education. This leads me to a factual issue to see how clear the facts here are. Is it your position that the educational team, knowing about his placement, concludes that his best education is at that institution?
It is, and it's supported twice in the record.
And then your position is, if I understand it, because you had it in your team, IEP team, determined that his educational plan should be at that institution, rather than move him from the institution to a school in that district, or something else. Therefore, since you would now say education is the placement rather than juvenile court. And because education is the placement, he falls under the federal law, which says the state unit pays for everything because it's educational, even though there are expenses for medical treatment and care in the institution, room and board.
The room and board would be covered under federal law by the state institution that pays. In this instance, pursuant to state law, that would be the county. The medical costs are not, and Rangel is not seeking payment for medical costs.
But the federal law, the way you interpret it under the facts as you interpret them, would say the parent pays nothing because the federal law says everybody else has to pay.
That's correct. Federal law read in conjunction with 115.8 sub 4B5.
Are medical services the only services that are not covered under FAPE?
In today's factual scenario, yes. In today's factual scenario, yes, in what's before this court.
Yeah, how about in a hypothetical? Are there services other than medical services that can be borne by the parent?
To be honest with you, Your Honor, I'm hard-pressed at the podium to recall another.
Mm-hmm.
There may well be, but I'm not recalling it.
Well, suppose, because I'm just not clear what the record shows as the fact here. Suppose that the same fact. He's placed in Lakeview, this institution, because of security problems, right?
Yes.
All right. Now, suppose that the IEP says we have to educate him here because of security problems. We can't screen him, we can't put him in a school, we can't put him in a different institution. We're going to educate him here because he's got security problems. Does that change anything?
Not really. The concept of the local educational agency, in other words, the entity that offers the IEP and the placement, that concept includes the notion that the representative for the local education agency, known as the LEA, would have an understanding of the available resources within the district to meet the child's needs. So if the district, a hypothetical district, determined that it had appropriate resources within the district to handle a very difficult needs child in the district, in the regular education environment, it would by law be obligated to make the placement offer to that environment. Implicit in the IEP team's determination in this case was a recognition that Robert's disabilities were so severe he was not going to obtain adequate educational benefit, but for a life.
Well, then my question becomes, anytime you have someone below the compulsory education age, which is what, 16, 17, whatever it is, so that he or she has to be educated, and is placed in an institution, not a school, an institution, that person has to be given an opportunity for education, right, under both federal and state law. So they're placed in an institution, they have to be given the opportunity for education. So you're going to have a team there to work with this, and the team's going to order some education, right, of somewhere, sometime. And as soon as that happens then, isn't your position that automatically the county has to pay everything and the parent is responsible for nothing? That is nothing that's in this case.
That is completely dependent upon whether the LEA, the IEP team, makes the placement offer to a residential institution. 115.81 deals only with what they call child caring institutions.
Okay, but if the child is an institution, how likely is it going to be that the person, that the team is going to say, for 4 hours a day, move them out, send them 20 miles across county line or within the county or within the school?
That is going to be completely dependent upon the child, and that's reflected in the very name, the individualized education program.
So your position is that
Certainly. It's well within the capabilities of the school district to make the determination that the child can best be served by being mainstreamed and all the benefits of the mainstream education. One of the problems with the circuit court on that question was the circuit court read 115.81 sub 4B5 to state that if the placement, the initial placement, the CHIPS placement, was not for educational purposes, then the subsequent IEP placement would not have the effect of transferring the costs from the parent to the county. And the statute simply cannot be read to achieve that result. Frankly, reading the statute to achieve that result results in the statute having virtually no application whatsoever. Because if the county has no application under 115.81 upon making a recommendation for a residential placement for a child, then neither does an IEP team, and neither does the local educational agency. All of those three are identified as the entities in partnership under the cost-shifting procedure identified in this as three section. So the circuit court very respectfully interpreted this statute in a way that will render it inoperable in virtually every circumstance.
But your interpretation, get back to the point I made earlier, seems to allow the IEP team to overrule the judge.
In certain circumstances, Your Honor, there is a definite possibility, and we would then be very squarely faced with a preemption question. Because if the IEP team takes a look at a CHIPS, and I could pick one, CHIPS, any one of them, and says that is a confinement order, but we in fact determine that under federal law, our obligation is to put the child in the least restrictive, most appropriate environment. They have that federal obligation. They must meet it. They can't simply abandon it or abdicate it in the face of state law. And we may well then as a hearing on. But again, that's not the fact scenario in this case, and we therefore ask for a much narrower look at what we're doing here today than would be required, I think, under that circumstance. I
don't know. When you say that in this record there are at least two instances in which the IP team said that it was this was necessary for his educational benefit,
yes,
aside from what the judge ever did in the first instance.
Yes. And I would direct...
What if we read the record and I find that there's a question as to whether or not the IEP team would have made this recommendation without the judicial placement. Would you agree then we have to send it back for that kind of...
I would very respectfully disagree. Section 115.812 of the statutes creates a very specific procedure whereby if a dispute arises between the county department and the school district as to whether the IEP team's placement offer was appropriate, they can take that dispute to the Department of Public Instruction for resolution. That did not occur in this case. The placement is deemed appropriate conclusively in Reynolds' opinion.
Doesn't that then support the theory that what subsection 4B5 does is simply designate who pays for the education right across the school district or the county?
It does.
It doesn't change the nature of the placement, which in this case was a mental health placement under a CHIP order, which allows the parent to be assessed some of the costs.
Your Honor, I would respectfully not read sub 4B5 to indicate all of the language that precedes it in section 115.81. The procedure does contemplate a county recommendation for a CHIPS or JIPS or whatever, and the word they use is whenever. Whenever a county makes a placement recommendation, all the following shall occur. And then it's a roadmap as to what happens.
Right. And that's what happened here.
So if the county makes a recommendation under JIPS, whatever it may be, that's going to be followed up by law, as recognized in this section, by an IEP determination as to most appropriate educational placement as well. And it's, the words are very clear in the statute that what the LNA will be undertaking is an educational placement determination. And I can refer the court's attention to Section 115.81 sub 4, and it specifically states whenever the responsible LEA offers an educational placement in a child care institution, then all of the following shall apply. So the statute is drafted in such a way to recognize two determinations of residence, essentially.
Well, an educational placement that does not supplant the earlier mental health placement by order of the judge in the CHIPS petition, but that just pertains to where the child is going to be educated. And so the reference in sub 4B5, is simply who's going to pay for that education, whether it's going to come out of the school district special education funds, or whether the county is going to pay because the county made the original or participated in the original CHIPS placement.
It's
a cost-shifting kind of a device as between governmental agencies. It doesn't change the nature of the initial original placement or the parent's obligation to contribute to that if, in fact, it's a mental health placement under CHIPS initiated by the parent because the child was, it could no longer remain in the home.
I would very, very respectfully, Your Honor, disagree with the premise for the statement you just made, and that is the discussion I've had with Justice Babbage, is whether the IEP placement supplants the CHIPS placement. In this instance, it did not. It coincided with the CHIPS placement because the CCIs were identical. Theoretically, it could. And in the event that it could, and I made this point to the Court of Appeals when arguing there, if we have two residential treatment centers, one called Lakeview where Robert's at, and one called Lakeside, half a mile down the road. If the school district and the IEP team determine that Lakeside is the least restrictive, most appropriate environment at which Robert could receive educational benefit, it is fully within its authority to make a placement, educational placement offer to Lakeside. So therefore, Robert would be taken from Lakeview for some period of the day, transferred down the street, and he would receive educational benefit, after the end of which he would be returned to Lakeview.
And in that sense, doesn't violate the court order because the institution itself might allow somebody to leave for a weekend or
whatever
during the day, whatever it is. And the court isn't saying, never get out.
Exactly. Again, not a confinement order. In a confinement order, I think we're going to be directly running into the question that Justice
Well, no, even under the scenario that you have just outlined, the county will have to pay Lakeside, as well as Lakeview, and the parent would have to contribute to the child's stay at Lakeview.
Correct. Exactly correct. But that's not what occurred here. What occurred here was the school district, the IEP team, made a placement offer to Lakeview. And therefore, by operation of federal law and state law, that cost transfers to the county. That's how the statute is written, respectfully, Your Honor.
But, so if you had two different institutions, one for the mental security issue and the other for education, the education would be, what, free? But there would be a charge under Chapter 48 for the security issue.
I see my time's up.
You may answer my question.
Yes. In the event that the security issue is raised in the context of an IEP team placement to the same CCI, those costs cannot be transferred to the parent. Section 300.302 of the Code of Federal Regulations says at no cost to the parent. The court has no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. My name is Melody Buchner. I am a corporation counsel from Calumet County, and I am here on behalf of Calumet County, who is the petitioner respondent, I believe. Before I begin, I just want to remind the court that I had filed a request to tender a portion of my oral argument time to the Wisconsin School Board, because this case could have the potential of affecting them almost as significantly as us. But it was appropriate to hear from the school districts. And in addition, I am not an expert in IDEA law, and if something comes up and I can't answer it, Ms. Gerbig is very likely to be able to help you all with that question. I think that when this case first came through, the first thing I said to the trial court was, if the father is right in this case, he's going to change how we do business. Because we have been operating under 115.81 for about the last 8 years. And I think that it is very easy to overthink this because we have two competing concepts going on. One is the civil rights statute that belongs in IDEA, and the other thing is the social policy that the state of Wisconsin has said is that parents have to support their children. And I think that it's easy to get confused as to how those two interact. And I think the father in this case has misinterpreted 115.81. Now, just briefly, how this statute came into place. It used to be that we didn't have this nailed down in a process. Although the process worked the same as it does now, we didn't have it written. The federal government came in on an audit of our IDEA process and said, you know what, you're losing those kids in the CCIs. We don't know what's happening to them, and we don't know if they're being educated. and we're going to pull your federal IDEA funds, state of Wisconsin, unless you put together something that puts this down on paper so we can track these kids and make sure they're educated. So the players got together, the players being DPI, Department of Health and Family Services in the county, and they nailed down this statute, and it set forth the responsibilities from all the different parties as to who was going to be responsible once the child was placed in the CCI for doing the assessment to determine if it was a special education assessment, to who paid for it. And for the last 8 years or so, this has been working. And I would point out to you that we have been collecting child support in these cases. We were collecting it then, we're still collecting it now. So this statute has been in place and it has been working. I think what happens in this case and where we get stuck is when opposing counsel says, if you educate the child at the CCI, it's an educational placement. I think that's where we stop, because he bounces then back into 11581 and says, based on this education of the child at Lakeview, you now have an educational placement. And that isn't what this statute says.
Well, it's a chicken and egg argument going on here as far as the placement, and that's what I'm trying to follow. The opposing counsel seems to indicate that once the IEP gets involved, that they can independently, and of course we had the Lakeview and Lakeside example, but the independent, because they can independently determine that, that therefore the original placement made by Judge Poppy for mental health concerns falls out of the picture. It's the IEP making the educational decision. Now, I just want to, I'm trying to follow, just take issue with that.
Yes, I do. I disagree. The juvenile court judge in this case has exclusive jurisdiction over that child. And I think one of the things that gets equated here is an educational placement with a CHIPS placement, and they're two different things. I mean, Judge Poppy's order for Robert to go to Lakeview is, thou shalt go to Lakeview, thou shalt live there. An educational placement under the federal IDEA is not necessarily a location or a situs. If you have the disability and if you need the educational services to get an education, you have been educationally placed. But the educational placement is more like welcome to the special education program. What services can we render to you to make sure that you benefit from education?
Counsel, let us assume for purposes of this question to you that the individualized educational plan team did make the proper findings of necessary. And they could have put Robert down at Lakeside, but they said, no, it's necessary that he be here. So let's remove that as a bone of contention between you. Because my question is, assuming that they are correct, that this was necessary to place him at Lakeside, or Lakeview, and of course that he was initially placed because of the CHIPS order, who pays? Are you saying that he pays everything?
No. If this was an educational placement by the IEP team at Lakeview,
and we're assuming that it is,
and if that's the case, then I do think there is a preemption issue. And I don't think a preemption issue. I don't think that we can require Robert's father to contribute child support in that particular case. Then we're going to have an argument between the school districts and the counties as to who's going to be responsible for paying for that placement. The theory behind 11581 is if Calumet County places Robert at Lakeview, that's Calumet County's decision that the child is going there, and we pick up the tab for that. If the local education agency places Robert there for educational purposes, then 11581 is not applicable. And we will argue that case if that case ever comes up. But as long as it's a placement by Calumet County and services rendered to Robert there through the local education agency, it's our responsibility to pay for that, including the education. But we also then have the rest of that, which allows us to collect child support from the parents, just like we do any time a child is placed outside a home. Did I answer your question?
The puzzle that you see on my face is I have such a difficult time hearing, and it's really a disservice to you and this court.
I'm
the frustration that my colleagues.
Let me try to slow down. One of the issues that came up here. Does this help? I can sit right here. Does that help?
Yes, that does.
Okay, I'll try it this way. One of the issues that came up in Mr. Petronic's argument was the issue of security. And if you take a look at 11581, under subsection 4A2, security is an issue that the IEP team has to take into consideration. And the way that operates from a practical point of view is it is an exception to the least restrictive educational placement for the child. Normally, the school district has to educate the child in the least restrictive setting possible. But in cases where a child is placed in a CCI by a juvenile court order, they have to consider security. There are lots of different kinds of CCIs out there. Lincoln Hills is a CCI. Those Lincoln Hills children are not educated in the regular school district, not because of their educational needs, but because of the security needs, because they have been contained or confined by a court order. And so for the IEP team to take into consideration Robert's security needs is appropriate under the statute. It is an exception to the least restrictive setting for education for him.
Well, and to follow up on that, as a practical matter, let's take the CHIPS order out of this. If all we had was an IEP for this child, it would be unusual for the IEP to recommend an institutional educational placement because of that least restrictive environment requirement, and also because it's very expensive, and so they only do it rarely. It eats up the special ed money that school districts have, and they only do it in the most extreme cases. So if this were just a freestanding IEP, those sorts of institutional placements are extremely rare, aren't they?
Very rare. In fact, in Stockbridge, we've never placed a child in an outside of home placement, never in the last 30 years that we've had the IED program. The other thing I would point out is you don't make a decision to place a child in a CCI if the child's education is succeeding in the service place that he is. And when we first started with Robert, he was in Stockbridge. He was receiving services through Stockbridge in the special education program, and he was doing well there. And you only go to a more restrictive setting when the educational component is not being met. And in this case, it was being met. He was on track to graduate. The other thing I think that is critical is that Mr. Petronic indicates today that the document, the IEP itself, indicates that Robert has to be educated at the CCI. And he says that twice in the document, the IEP team tossed out placement at Waterford. But I think if you look closer at the IEP, what it says is we discarded the idea that Robert would be in the regular school district at Waterford. Robert has not been in the regular education program since second grade. So they looked at that and said, does he need special education services? And the answer is yes. That's what that IEP says. It doesn't say he can't be educated at the school. It says he can't be educated for services. He can't be in the regular program.
Well, let me read a quote to you from that IEP team. Quote, programming in the regular ed setting was considered and rejected due to Robert's displayed behaviors that severely interfere with his learning and the learning of others.
Yeah,
so they said they did consider that.
Yeah, that says regular education program. That means he's in the special education program. That doesn't mean he's placed at Lakeview. The regular education program was looked at and discarded because he needs special education services. That's not in dispute. He does need the services. The question has to be, is does this IEP in and of itself make an educational placement? And I submit it does not. The first thing it says in the IEP document is that Calumet County placed Robert here for mental health purposes. And all that is a recognition that 115.81 applies in this case.
Well, when they use the word regular programs, does that mean regular and special ed, or just mean regular?
It means regular.
It doesn't include special ed.
No, this IEP is, does this child need special education services, or can he be educated in the regular setting?
And so they say he needs special ed. Then what's their conclusion, that the special ed should be given at
Lakeview for security purposes because of his mental health treatment? You know, if you take a close look at the federal IDEA provisions, it allows a school district to take care of its special education requirements not only by educating the child in a classroom, but by also going into a home, going into an institution, going into a hospital. And what that is the federal government's recognition that sometimes those children are going to be in places where they can't come into the regular classroom, and they still have the right to be educated. And if Lakeview had not had teachers on staff, the Racine County School District would have sent an educator in. Robert's classes that he was taking two of them. He had 5 hours of class a week. They would have sent a teacher in to educate him for those two classes. That's how they would have accomplished that goal.
Now, what I hear from both you and opposing counsel is that a decision in this case has to be narrowly written just for these facts, because when you change some of these facts, you might change the result. Is that right?
I agree with that.
Okay. So what are the facts here that you agree with that compel the result you seek?
I'm sorry, I lost
what, it's okay. What are the facts that are narrow that compel the result you seek?
Okay, what I'm asking you to do is affirm the trial court.
I understand.
Okay. I think that you have to first take into consideration the path that Robert got to Lakeview. You have to look at the fact he came through a CHIPS program.
Does it matter if it's first or second CHIPS?
No.
Okay.
It came first from CHIPS that he was placed there. Second, that the IEP team met and reviewed Robert's history. And Robert's history in the special education program was that it was succeeding for him, that it was working, and that he was working towards his education. The fact that his primary need at this point was not educational. His primary need was treatment of his mental health issues. You have to remember, Robert had spent over 6 months at the Winnebago Mental Health Facility, and there was nothing left that they could do to treat him. That was his overweening need at the point, was the need for the medical treatment.
How do we know that? Does the IEP team say that? How do we know that the treatment was primary here? Because he was placed in CHIPS, and what is it that tells us that?
Because of the fact that he got to Lakeview based on the juvenile court order, which was solely for the purposes of medical health treatment, mental health treatment.
Back to CHIPS, okay. And then, is another fact the IEP team placed him in the same institution? Do we need the same institution here?
Yes, that okay. Is, of course, significant.
All right. What else is significant?
The fact that the IEP plan itself had Robert taking only two classes, the fact that Robert would graduate with a high school diploma with some assistance, the fact that the IEP team goals for Robert were to increase his on-task performance 80 to 90%, to return him to task with verbal prompts, to identify when he's off task, and to have him back.
The way I hear that is that you're just saying the IEP team did a good educational plan.
Yes, they
did. And considered all of these matters, and then placed him in the same institution for education.
I think they didn't do anything at all other than agree to put together a plan for services to Robert while he was at that facility. I don't want to say that they placed him there.
Would you say that in considering security, they would have to conclude this was the least restrictive place for him in accordance with their instructions under the statute?
I think the least restrictive has two meanings. One of the meanings is where is the least secure place, and the other one is what does the child need to gain from his education? And their least restrictive is the least restrictive for educational purposes, not security. For example, at the county, when we have a child who is a sexual predator, we take that child and send them to the Hami home. The Hami home educates those children on the premises. And that isn't because the child's education needs require the child to be at the Hami home. It's because, for security purposes, we cannot allow the sexual predators into the regular school district.
Well, when I was a circuit judge, I was thinking when I sent people up to in Orta Omni Home, that the IEP would not be the overriding consideration. The overriding consideration, regardless, I'll ask counsel this when he gets up for rebuttal, would be security. So the IEP could not take a person, in my opinion, from Lincoln and put them some other place because of the security concern. And I think Justice Babbage was talking about whether you would be overriding the order or the decision of the judge based upon the particular crime, whether it was robbery, sexual assault, etc. So that is at least my take on how this would operate.
Oh, and I would definitely agree. The juvenile court has exclusive jurisdiction over the situs or the location of that child. Now, I have one other point that I want to make. I agree with something Mr. Petronic said, in a sense that we want to maintain the integrity of both of the tracks that are running in these particular cases. One track being the juvenile court ordering placement, the family court ordering child support, and the other IDEA track that deals with education. And we really don't want a situation where we're allowing the administrative law judge in a due process hearing to issue child support or make decisions about child support. We want to keep the system that we have, which allows each of them to do what they need to do to work cooperatively together. And one of the pieces of information that I got from your office was that if additional information came to my attention, that I was to bring it to you. And what I didn't know at the time that I wrote my brief was that Robert's father started a collateral challenge in the due process for child support. And he filed a complaint or petition or whatever terminology they use to say that the child was not being given the free public education. And my understanding is that the administrative law judge suspended a ruling pending what this court did. And I think that when we talk about narrow solutions, we need to take into consideration that not only is this going to affect counties, but the federal tract is also paying attention to what we're doing. And we just want the juvenile court to maintain the issues of placement and custody and terms, and the IEP teams and the federal track to take care of the educational issues. We want them to respect each other, but we don't want any crossovers, because we don't want a situation where there is an IEP plan that places a child somewhere other than where a juvenile court places them.
Well, my question was, could that happen? Could they take a, say, for example, you used the example of a sexual predator from the Omni Home and put that person some other place?
Actually, if you look at 11581, what it says in there in, one of the subsections, is that if there is a dispute about the IEP placement for educational purposes, if they want to educate that child somewhere other than the grounds where the judge has ordered that person, that they have to go in and get the permission of the agency that made the recommendation. So they'd have to come back to Calumet County and say, can we educate this child in the regular school district? And if Calumet County's department said no, then you would be into the next statute, which would send the issue to DPI.
What would you find wrong with a holding? I'm trying to think, okay, if I were to write the case or whatever, if we were to hold, for instance, that in a situation that we're confronted with here, under these specific facts, if the IEP team is not is not persuaded by the juvenile court placement, but in essence says that this is the place to do it. Who pays? Then what happens?
Well, if the county places a child at Lakeview, it's our bill, and we'll take care of that responsibility. If Lakeview wants to send the child somewhere else for educational purposes, I'm sorry, if the local education makes the placement, then it'll be their responsibility to pay for the component of the education. I don't know. That is an interesting question. The theory, though, is if the county is the one who places the child, the county should pay the tab, and the federal IDEA funds that are available should not have to be tapped into to pay for those placements.
So you want us to uphold the trial court and say that because this was incidental to the juvenile court placement, that IDEA is not applicable. Those provisions of IDEA that say that it all must be paid for are not applicable.
Yeah, that the statutes can be read together. Now, I think there probably is some on-the-edge preemption, which is that I don't think the counties ought to be charging the parents the cost of education. We may have joined together and hammered out an agreement to take care of that responsibility, but I think the children are entitled to the education for free. And so when we go back to collect child support from the parents, I think it would be appropriate for us to segregate out the educational portion of it.
So Randall's share doesn't provide, payments don't cover educational expenses.
No, it's 8%. It was $9,000 a month. He paid $2,500 out of a $50,000 bill. And
the education's free, he's paying for something else.
Yeah, he's paying for the mental health provisions. Lakeview is the most expensive CCI in the state. It has the highest ratio of mental health professionals per person, per resident, and that's why it's so expensive.
Thank you, Council. Council, we, as you were told, the court will be going to the ceremony in commemoration of the anniversary of September 21, 2001. And I'm going to give you a choice. We don't have 12 minutes left before we have to leave. So I could terminate this now and all of you come back at 1:45. And then we'll hear from you, Mr. And then from yours, Mr. Connick. Or we can try and get as much of you in as possible. I think the preference would be to let it sit now and then all of you come back rather than interrupt you. If that's all right with you all. Is that okay? All right. Then the court is in recess until 1:45. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Justices of the Court. May it please the Court, I am Mary Gerbig, and I represent the Wisconsin Council of Administrators of Special Services, otherwise known as WCAS. These are the school administrators responsible for ensuring compliance with the Individuals with Disability Education Act. The parent in this case raises the issue of whether or not education is being provided free for the child as required by the IDEA. As background, this child was placed by the circuit court under a CHIPS petition. The parent is attempting to bootstrap under the IDEA in order to avoid the child support court ordered in this case. We believe he's doing this by misreading the term educational placement as found under the IDEA. as directed by the Seventh Circuit, educational placements under the IDEA are not defined. And clearly, the Seventh Circuit has told us that what an educational placement is not an exact science. It is directed by the facts. Justice Wilcox this morning made a statement that this is sort of a chicken and an egg case. I would say to you, it is the tail wagging the dog. The facts and circumstances that precede placement by the county in a residential care facility drives the question of who pays for the placement. If the placement is educationally driven, the local educational agency is responsible for the cost. But if it is medically driven, the LEA is not responsible for the cost of the medical treatment or custodial care. In cases where the child is already placed for the medical treatment and the medical providers inform the IEP team that the child cannot leave an institutional or residential setting due to the medical treatment and or the security concerns, it is not the educational services which are driving the placement, rather it is the medical. As such, the medical treatment and custodial care is not a part of what we call the FAPE, Free Appropriate Public Education, package of services. The IDEA...
And then who pays? You said if it's educationally driven, then so-and-so pays. I didn't understand what you...
If it's educationally driven, the term under the IDEA is a local educational agency. In plain words, it's the local school district. Now, this case is a little...
If it's medically driven, then it's the county?
If it's medically driven, I would tell you it is not the school. It may be the parents. It may be the county, given what court orders are already in place. And there may be other funding mechanisms that the parents may tap into.
Well, what if it's a combination of both?
Well, then the Seventh Circuit says that we look at this fact-driven approach. And I would say to you here, the circumstances are that we have a statute that addresses when you already have a CHIPS or a GIPS order in place. 115.81, historically, it was designed for those situations in which we already had an order in place. And then we looked at what the cost-shifting kinds of mechanisms would be, and we also looked at who would be responsible for ensuring that certain parts of the IDEA requirements were met.
So who pays then when it's a combination of both?
I would say to you that when it's a combination of both, the Seventh Circuit would tell you that. We look at this fact-driven approach and that you can see whether or not it is primarily one, medical, or primarily educational. Just as established, let me give you an example.
Could you answer my question?
I will give you. You're looking for the hypothetical under which school district pays, and I tell you the preceding facts are really what drives that. Here's an example under which the school district would pay for residential placement. If I have a student in a school district who has been diagnosed with autism, and that student is in an educational program in which they are not making any progress, and we try a variety of different strategies, we try a variety of different programs in which the child is still not making educational progress, They're not benefiting from their plan. The district may be required under the IDEA to look outside the regular education school and look at a residential facility. Now, the educational driven part of that may be that we say, because of the educational program, it requires consistency over a 24-hour period in order for that child to actually benefit.
Let's just assume for the moment that, in my ignorance, I decide that this is driven by both an educationally, it's educationally driven and it's medically driven. What's the solution then?
I would say to you that you can look at the facts in a particular situation.
I'm talking about this situation.
In this situation, I would say to you that it is very clear from the order that was issued that Winnebago Mental Health Institution looked at this child and said that there's a medical reason he needs to go to the residential care facility, and you can look at the facility where they place the child, and that tells you something about whether it was primarily for medical treatment or for educational treatment.
So you're not going to answer my question.
I will answer your question. What do you do when it's both? And I'm saying to you, I think that the educational part of this is not driving the medical part. The IEP team, as a matter of law, can't come in after there's been a CHIPS order in place that says this student has to go for medical treatment at a particular facility, a facility which is regulated under the administrative code and is primarily mental health professionals.
Is the answer to Justice Babbage's question, you should keep on saying primarily, is that the answer, if I may, if you've got both, then the answer as to you have to make a determine which one is primary.
Exactly. That is the answer.
Then let's say in your mind it's 60-40. Is there any segregation of funds? I mean, any is there any 60-40 allotment, or is it all or nothing?
Under 115.81, let me direct you back to sub 4, number 2, it's A2, and then A4 that sort out this question. The school district takes the child in the context of an order already being in place that places them at the RCI. The exception to least restrictive environment is, and this is a statutory exception, is that they've got to consider the treatment and security needs. In order for them to move that child away from that setting, they have to go to sub 4, which tells us they've got to go back to consulting with a child caring institution. Who are those people? Those are the mental health professionals, doctors, other health professionals who will say whether or not the IEP team, which consists of educational people, whether or not the educators are correct. In this instance, the question came earlier whether or not the IEP team can walk in the door after a child has been placed and override that order. And I would say to you, given this language, as a matter of law, this IEP team does not have the discretion to modify or influence the medical placement in this case. And that is what this is. Lakeview is a mental health treatment facility with security.
So you're saying that the parents and or the county could share in the cost? That's
I am. I'm saying to you that this is a child support case. This is how this comes to this court, as a child support case. It is not coming to you primarily as an IDEA case. It first comes to you as a child support case. And then we have a statute which was put in place that tells us what do we do in these circumstances, 115.81. And it tells the IEP team under that 4A sub 2, what do they have to do in order to comply with those orders. It doesn't give them free rein to walk in and to change the medical placement or the security placement.
Okay. So we've got the court order placing him in Lakeview.
Mm-hmm.
The IDEA team comes in and says, fine, but right around the corner from Lakeview is Lakeside, which has an educational program. It has security, and so for 4 hours a day for education, he should go to Lakeside. Is that a reasonable, is that a realistic issue?
The IEP team could sit down and say, we know of another facility that may be less restrictive. However, the IEP team walking in the door can't make that decision by itself. They would have to go to this sub 4, and they'd actually have to consult with the place where the child is.
Okay, we're all consulting. Everybody agrees. 4 hours in Lakeside. How do you pay? I'm trying to get at Justice Babbage's question in a concrete kind of fact situation. He's primarily put in Lakeview because we've got a security issue. Well, we have to educate him, right? And he's
correct.
Put in Lakeside for 4 hours on education. Got it? I mean, now,
correct.
I know very little about this in the field, so I have to deal with the... So now, how is it paid?
I would say to you that in this context, the school districts would argue that the county still pays. I would tell you that there's...
Okay, that's the school district because it doesn't want to pay. What about between the county and the parent?
I would say to you that under this part of the statute, that what we're talking about is the potential of segregating what are the educational costs.
Okay, we know it's going to cost Lakeside for 4 hours. Who's going to pay?
Not the parent.
Not the education. Absolutely right. Not
correct.
That. Going to pay anything to Lakeview? What is the parent going to pay to Lakeview under Chapter 48?
The parent has the opportunity, I would say not opportunity, but the obligation to pay child support, which is ordered by the court. And that is really going to the care and the custody portion of it.
And your position is that doesn't violate the federal laws that say we're educating a disabled child, the parent does not have to pay.
I say that it does not violate the federal law, and I say to you it is not a preemption issue. And I say that this statute was created to be in harmony with the IDEA. I do want to tell you that the red light has gone.
Right.
So I do have one brief follow-up question. Would this IEP have recommended education at Lakeview but for this child's residency at Lakeview pursuant to the CHIPS order?
I think if I understand the question, I think that the IEP team came in the context of a CHIPS order already being in place, and when they considered the security and the treatment needs, if that CHIPS order had not been there and they had not been required to look at the security and treatment needs, you would have been seeing a school district IEP team that would have been looking at what is called least restrictive environment, and under the federal law that tells us we must start at the regular education environment. We got to start with the regular education classroom and work backwards. And given the fact that this student was making progress when he was in the previous educational setting, we would have been down on the least restrictive end of regular education environment and then special education programs surrounding it.
Could I ask Robert H., I imagine is attracting some school aides. Who are those school aides going to?
In terms of the child count, I'm going to defer and say I do not have the answer for you on the child count in terms of where the aides are coming from. Stockbridge was the first school involved. Stockbridge would have counted the child, and then when the child came down to the Waterford Union School District, Waterford Union then would have been able to count that child for purposes of getting the flow through funds from the federal government under the IDEA.
And do those funds then go to the county some way?
No. In this instance, under 115.81, the reason you see the counties agreeing to pick up the cost of the educational component is because they recognize that primarily under these CHIPS petitions or JIPS petitions, we're looking at county placements that are of such a great cost that isn't a cost that fairly should be borne by the school districts that have a residential care facility sitting in their backyard. And so normally where it would be the school district that would be picking up the cost, we, under the statute in the state, have an agreement between the agencies that shifts the cost back to the counties.
Well, I want to make sure I understand. The aides that come in to support Robert H. are going to the Waterford School District, and the Waterford School District has made the decision that the individual educational plan ought to be executed at Lakeview and paid for by the county. So that Waterford gets to keep all the money but doesn't have any of the responsibility?
Waterford actually, though they are keeping the money, I do want to point you back to sub 4 of 115.81. There certainly are administrative costs that relate to the IEP team being convened and doing the processing of putting together an IEP, monitoring that IEP, making sure that the student is being reevaluated every 3 years. So there are still costs to the school district. The other thing to bear in mind is the IDEA funds that come in are not covering all the costs of the education for that child in any event. If you look at Stockbridge, for all the students who are in the Stockbridge school, there were $27,000 that came from the federal government directly to that school in 1 year to service all the students that were receiving special education under the IDEA. When you look at the cost of this placement at Lakeview, it was $9,000. There's a great disparity in terms of the money that's being expended. And where it is county-initiated to place the child, the parties, the agencies, when they created the statute, agreed that there should be a shifting of the cost over to the county, and that included the educational costs.
Yeah, that's $9,000 a month.
Correct. And so if you look at the placement for this one student at Lakeview, 3 months for that one student could have consumed all of the dollars that were available from the federal government for all of the students for that year at Stockbridge Schools.
One other thing, the federal money that comes in, that doesn't displace the state aid, does it?
No, it's in addition to.
The state aid would go to
Stockbridge or whatever the local educational agency is as well.
But that would be Waterford here, wouldn't it?
Yes, in this case, Waterford, although Waterford is a small district and it is a part of a special education cooperative in which Racine County actually then takes the monies that they receive for special education from Waterford, and they combine that to provide services to a variety of schools within that county. The answer to the question, though, do those state aids and federal funds under the IDEA cover all the costs of education, even in the regular education environment? The answer is no. The school districts at a local level are putting more and more of their dollars into filling out the mandates that come under the IDEA.
Thank you, Council. Thank you. Mr. Petronic.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have only 25 points on rebuttal after all of that. I'd like to first address, I think, one of the primary issues that was bouncing back and forth this morning, and that would be who has the authority, whose territory is it when a juvenile court enters an order and an IEP team thinks it might want to do something different. The question has been presented to Wisconsin courts before, and it's been answered in a 1997 decision by Judge Nettesheim. In the interest of Trent N., which is referenced in my brief and was raised this morning, the court determined that the two systems are to work concurrently. IDEA does not necessarily trump the juvenile court's jurisdiction, nor do juvenile court proceedings necessarily prevent an IDEA process from continuing. The same principle must apply here. I answered the justice's question this morning perhaps too literally, because I understood the justice to be asking, what is the end game? If we have two intransigent parties, the juvenile court system decides he's going to be there, and the IEP team, for whatever inconceivable reason, decides that, no, the kid needs to be somewhere else, who's supposed to win? The question, I think, then devolves into a preemption issue, and I would hope that that question, frankly, is never presented to this court, because I think then you're going to have a very serious conflict.
Counsel, so that if a sexual predator is placed in a homie home, and you're saying that there's an inference that under preemption that the IEP team could say no, he or she shouldn't be there. That just, I mean, it's, and also Lincoln Hills, where they're there for security, it would seem to me, and maybe this is more common sense than the law in this area, but it would seem to me that that person would not be put out in the public where there would be a risk to the public if there was some heinous crime that was committed, particularly one that involves children.
I agree. And IEP teams are comprised of experts, and there are generally a number of experts involved in the team. It would be virtually inconceivable, I think, for this team to come to the conclusion that a sexual predator should be on the playground to receive some educational benefit. So, in other words, the end game, I think, is almost a
hypothetical,
infinitesimally small chance that that legal question would ever be brought forward. With respect to the cost issue, I can answer your question with respect to the facts of this case. We did have medical costs incurred in this case, and they were fully paid by the parent. As I stated this morning, we are not seeking reimbursement for those costs. Federal law makes clear we have no entitlement to them. What we are seeking is to not have to pay the educational-related costs of Lakeview by virtue of the fact that Robert had to be there to receive an educational benefit. In other words, the statutory scheme embodied in Wisconsin law, as well as federal law and federal regulations, was triggered. And it was triggered on all four corners. These are the facts, textbook set of facts, that would trigger the application of the law that we're here presenting to you today.
Well, here he's paying $170, he was paying $170 a month, right?
Correct.
The actual costs were $9,000 a month.
Correct.
So what was that $170 for? For educational or for medical? Or
it was for either education or CCI-related costs of his education. It was not for medical. He paid, his insurance company paid all the medical costs that were presented by Lakeview.
And it's your position that they have to pay everything except medical.
That's exactly correct in this instance.
Including security?
That's an issue. And I strongly disagree on the factual characterization made by Ms. Gerbig that this is a secure institution. Lakeview is recognized by the Department of Public Instruction as a private school. It's a neurorehabilitation clinic.
An open campus?
There's no security. You can come and go as you see fit. It's very unlike Winnebago or Lincoln Hills or in Ethan Allen. It's an open door. And I think the IEP team understood that. That's why they actually thought of bringing him within the district to receive services. And in response to that question, they did determine at 2 points in the record, and specifically noted at those same 2 points in the record on document 8, page 3, and document 8, page 16, that location was the consideration. That the IEP team was asked to identify the locations that were considered, and in response to each of those questions, it said Waterford was considered and rejected due to mental health issues in one instance, and due to the fact that Robert's disability severely affected his learning and the learning of others. The word security is not found in this IEP.
I may have misunderstood something you just said a moment ago about the circuit court's order. You said that it was an order to pay $170 a week toward education expenses?
No, the order was a standard child support order under section 46.10.
So the father is not being required to pay education expenses?
He is. The same costs that the circuit court characterizes as child support costs are in fact education and education-related costs. We're talking about the same pot of dollars. And that's exactly why we're here. Putting the label on it doesn't get around federal law.
Because you say that once you get into education, they have to take all related costs.
Yes.
But why can't I enter an order that says I'm going to pay $170 and that's for room and board?
Section 300.3.
Your education comes free.
I'm sorry.
And your education comes free.
Okay. Section 300.302 of the Code of Federal Regulations specifically states that if a residential treatment program is necessary for the child's education, then all costs of that program, including non-medical care and room and board, are to be at no cost to the parent. The circuit court twice characterized in the transcript that's in the record that what the court understood the parties to be fighting over was exactly that, room and board.
Now, do you think it's realistic to talk about a program that has both facets of security and education, and then do we decide what's primary?
In this, on this case, no. I could see a door potentially being opened for another kick at the cat, so to speak, perhaps be resolved by the Court of Appeals. on how security is going to be factored in. We have no security implication in this case. Robert was taken from Winnebago, a secure institution, and placed by court order upon recommendation by the county at Lakeview, a non-secure institution. Again, Lakeview is, it's a neurorehabilitation center. It essentially deals with children who have brain injuries. That's its fundamental purpose, and that would explain, frankly, why it's so expensive and has more doctors on staff than you'll find elsewhere.
So there's, what you're saying, there's no security, there's no locked doors, there's no one there to monitor.
If Robert didn't have somebody watching him, he could walk right out the front door.
Well, you said if he didn't have somebody watching, well, what is the watching?
There's a regimen there. He's in a general curriculum, which is supposed to help him not only attain.
He goes to school during the day. What is someone watching at night, or he can walk out as soon as he leaves class? He can walk out. Is that
it's my understanding. It's an open door facility. Yes.
Counsel, just to make sure that I understand your position. Let me juxtapose it against the position that the counsel, the previous counsel, took. She said that if the decision is to confine is educationally driven, then local education pays. If it's medically driven, then it's not the school, probably the county, I guess, and with the help of parents. I take it you would disagree with that. And your position seems to say that if education comes into it at all, it's then presumptively an educationally driven decision.
The question goes to, frankly, how the federal courts have interpreted when someone has to start paying, not necessarily how to allocate, although that can come into play after the first determination is made, but when. And it's been kicked around. All the circuits ultimately seem to come to the conclusion that if the purpose for putting the child in the educational facility, the residential facility, is so that the child can obtain educational benefit. And that, by the way, is not the initial case here. The first one was a CHIPS, but followed by an educational benefit question. Then all costs are supposed to be picked up by the state agency. States get to choose who's supposed to pay internally. If, however, other circumstances come into play, and you'll find cases like Clovis, where you have a child placed in a psychiatric hospital, but that psychiatric hospital was not the location chosen by the IEP team. The IEP team thought something else was going to cut the mustard. Then the courts take a look. Is this primarily medical in nature? Why is this kid here as opposed to where the IEP team went? I wanted the child placed. In this case, we have an IEP determination, and amongst all the federal cases that I've been able to find, two of them are on point on our facts and what happens when an IEP team says the kid needs placement, and then a county agency or a state agency tries to say, and there's a cost to that. And those are referenced in my brief, the Los Angeles County versus Smith case, as well as the New York case, the Pine, in both of those cases, the courts came down and said, you can't allocate those child support costs to the parent. Federal IDEA says when the IEP team makes the call, we honor that judgment. The judges, very, very respectfully, are not supposed to substitute their judgment for IEP teams when it comes down to what's appropriate.
Well, isn't the call that it is necessary, and isn't that the test, that public or private residential program is necessary? Placement in a public or private residential program is necessary to provide special education and related services.
Yes, that is the test. And in this case, the IEP determined it was, the IEP team determined it was necessary. Its words are very explicit in this regard. And
in the appendix, I was looking for the language is necessary. What page is that?
The word, actually, the IEP team, I don't believe we'll find, will use, has used the word necessary. But Justice Babbage spoke the words this morning. Programming in the regular ed setting. And again,
I'm sorry.
Programming in the regular ed setting. And this is found on page 16 of document 8 of the record.
Okay. Could you assist me? I see in the appendix
appendix page 118, appellant's appendix.
Thank you.
Sure. The question posed to the IEP team was whether the student will participate full-time with non-disabled peers in regular education, and then it goes on. The student will not participate full-time with non-disabled peers in regular education or age-appropriate settings. And then parenthetically it states, if you have indicated a location, I emphasize location, other than the regular education environment in 1, 2, or 3 above, you must check this box and explain why full-time participation with non-disabled peers is inappropriate. And the answer given by the IEP team, programming in the regular ed setting was considered and rejected due to Rob's displayed behaviors that severely interfere with his learning and with the learning of others.
So your argument as to whether or not there have been a determination by the IEP team that such placement is necessary depends on whether or not we interpret the language set forth on page 118 of the appendix as a determination by the IEP that such placement is necessary to provide education and related services, since there was no specific finding as to what is necessary. Those words were used. We've got to interpret this to be commensurate with the required findings in order for there to be full funding placement. Is that correct?
Ultimately so, and in addition to also page 105 of the appendix, because there too the IEP team spoke to what it considered to be the proper location for receipt of services.
And what language in 105 is the closest that you can point me to be tantamount to the IEP making the necessary finding under 300.302 that such a placement is necessary for the educational purposes?
Certainly. The question, you'll find it about one-third of the way down the page. And the IEP team, and this is the determination and notice of placement itself. This is the document that formally gets the job done when deciding to take a kid and put him from point A to point B and determine what he's going to get once he arrives at B. The question put to the IEP team lists other options, if any, related to the frequency, location, and duration of the special ed and related services, supplemental.
I'm sorry, I'm just not following you, and I apologize. You said this is at Appendix 105?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your appendix?
The appellant's appendix, it's page 3 of document 8 of the record. My references are to my appendix. I apologize if they're numbered differently in another document.
Okay.
I have found it on page 105.
105 is the CHIPS order.
Right.
Oh, well.
Are you looking at your Court of Appeals appendix, maybe?
I'm sorry?
Are you looking at your Court of Appeals appendix, maybe?
I hope not, but just if the court would permit me, and I apologize for the delay, I have my Supreme Court appendix right here in my brief.
Go ahead.
I am wrong, and you are correct. Appellate's. Pardon me. My appendix, page 109.
Okay.
Now...
Okay, one third of the way down the page, and again I reiterate, this is the placement offer. This is the legal document. List other options, if any, related to the frequency, location, duration of the special education and related services, supplemental aids and services, program modifications or supports for school personnel, and place those services that were considered. List the reasons rejected and a description of any other factors relevant to the proposed action. An option is none. You can check the none box right underneath the wording there. Instead, the IEP team stated that Waterford was considered and rejected due to Robert's mental health issues. I very respectfully submit they could hardly say more. If they needed to use the word necessary, that would have added icing to the cake, but the cake is here. If the court has no further questions, my time is long up, and I very much appreciate the question.
There is another question, counsel.
If you should prevail, and you know, local circuit courts are aware of the financial problems in their communities, and we're really getting down to who pays, and there's a lot of concern, obviously, as to who pays, because everybody realizes the pressure that there is on various units of government for the scarce dollars. But if you should prevail, why wouldn't a circuit judge, a trial court judge, when they're faced with a CHIPS proceeding of a juvenile who's still in school, why wouldn't they just not make any ruling and let an educational assessment come in so that all costs would be borne by the school district and not by the county?
I would trust the trial court judges, frankly, to evaluate the child as they find the child. If the child needs a determination as to need, I'm sorry, the child is entitled to a determination as to need under the CHIPS or even JIPS procedures, the trial court, I cannot conceive, would make that judicial decision based on an economic factor when it understands that the child pays. All right, if the question is, does the county pay or does the school district pay, the ultimate decision in that circumstance is going to be that the child is supposed to pay, and they're going to pay for it with mental health and potential danger to society. The idea of who pays in this circumstance is, it's the white elephant in the room, I believe. In this instance, contrary to a statement you may have heard earlier, the pot of dollars that we're looking for is $4,400. That's what my client is looking for, and it's not as though he needs the money to live. It's the principle that a free, appropriate public education means what it says. Free. His child is entitled to receive educational benefit where it is offered, and that's supposed to be at no cost to him. The question now is a legislative one, and it's been answered. That cost has been transferred to the county under these very specific circumstances. And I thank you all again.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Petronic, Ms. Buchinger, and Ms. Gerber for